Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, ooh, be careful. Yeah. That's like cruciate. That's potential cruciate in the making.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, I'm delighted to say Mark Lawrenson is with us to look back on a really interesting weekend of Premier League football. Mark, I'm going to pile straight in, and it's a pile on at the moment, on Nuno at Spurs. Three games, the first three games of the season, Harry Kane only played in the third one. He'd managed the situation beautifully. They had 9 points, things were going great. And now, it looks like he's not long for this world. How football is fickle.
Well, I mean, that's why we love it, isn't it? So, and it's like anything. I think that, you know, when you're a Premier League manager, if you win the first three games, you're absolutely brilliant, you're a god, and then you lose the next three and you're useless. So somewhere in the middle is probably where we're at. I mean, it's of paramount importance that they get Kane up and firing. I wouldn't say he's looking like he's sulking, but there is obviously a little something in there eating that. I'm thinking, I should be playing for Manchester City and I should be scoring at Chelsea and taking them apart like the rest of the City team did. So that's interesting for Daniel Levy. He obviously thinks he won the battle in terms of, well, he did win the battle in terms of stopping Kane going to Manchester City, but it looks like he stopped him playing at the moment because he only looks half of the player that he is and should be.
And is Nuno the right man for this Spurs team?
Well, put it this way: where would you go and who would you get if he isn't? And you can't listen. As ruthless as Levy is, you can't jettison him now. Just after six games, and they've got some new players as well, haven't they? But I mean, the problem with them is they look awful defensively. But we all knew that. We all knew that they've always looked awful defensively for ages and ages, and it's a team you can definitely get at. But on the day, they look, you know, they play really well, and you think they're really, really strong, but they're not strong enough. That therein lies the problem. But so you jettison Nuno, where do you go? I mean, you know, who would you go and get? Don't give me Sam Allardyce. No, I'm only joking, obviously.
It's interesting watching Nuno's body language yesterday, like shaking his head the moment the third goal goes in, and then in the aftermath of the game, he's like, I take full responsibility because the decisions were not right according to the game plan. I won't name individuals, but the game plan was not right according to the players who were on the pitch. So he's damning towards himself. Like, is that what you want to see as a player, that honesty, Mark, or is it kind of lying on his sword a little bit too quickly?
He's probably lying on his sword a little bit too quickly, but I get it. I think he's a very honest man, isn't he? You know, and you know, with all the interviews he used to do when he was at Wolves, he was always very, very honest, but he was always very much like, you know, the players have done absolutely everything, and if anybody's got things right, it's himself. So I think that's your personality. You can't sort of change your personality overnight. But, you know, it's like, this is the thing with the Premier League. I mean, everybody gets carried away completely. Look, I mean, it was a great weekend in many, many different ways, because did we expect City to win at Chelsea? I would argue probably majority of the people, no. Did we think that Liverpool would concede three goals at Brentford and end up with a 3-3? You'd argue, no. Did we think Man United would fall on the sword against Aston Villa? Oh, no, but that's why it's the best league in the world. But it will still be, you know, the top four teams will still be the top four teams. I know, obviously, Brighton can get in there if they beat Palace tonight, but we all know who the top four teams are, and long is it going to be so.
Just one other one on Spurs, and I know you've already kind of touched on this, but when it comes to Harry Kane, and feel free to use the benefit of hindsight 100% of your mark, but now, knowing everything we know, should they have sold him? Would it have been a good move for Spurs to cash in on Harry Kane at the summer?
Yeah, and I think there are many different reasons. They need the money, because obviously with the refurb of the ground, etc., there are millions, hundreds of millions in debt, so they've got to deal with that. And it looks at the moment as though that there is a hangover with Harry Kane. I think he'll be back and he'll be scoring, because there's one thing about him: he's a very honest person and very honest player. So I don't think that's an issue. Nuno will be talking to him, little, you know, man to man chats, etc. But yeah, but it's done and it's gone, and they've sort of got to get on with it. But you know that, you know, maybe in three or four games, and Tottenham turn it completely round, everyone will be loving Nuno and everyone's saying, oh, what a great decision for Harry not to go. It's just football, isn't it? But it is absolutely fascinating, the behind the scenes and the politics about it all.
Well, what about Arsenal? Because if there is a prototype for a club to turn things around pretty quickly, it is suddenly Mikel Arteta having put a couple of wins together and the team playing a discernible style of football. It's like, he was always the right man all along. Whereas like 3 weeks ago, it was like, get Arteta out.
Well, listen, for Nuno, put in Arteta. It's completely reverse, isn't it? And they've done well, obviously, in winning the three games. But what are they? Were they Burnley away, Norwich at home, and then obviously the big rivalry at the weekend against Tottenham? Look, if you're not fired up as a player to play against your biggest rivals, then there are all sorts of problems. I always think with Arsenal, we'll get this. We'll go 7-8 games unbeaten, and they'll lose 3 or 4. I'm not sure when I look at them and people like Lacazette and Aubameyang, are they really there for the cause? I'm not sure that they are. And I think, you know, the kids in this team who are coming through, look, top players. If they can get your Aubameyangs and Lacazettes playing with them, you know, they will definitely improve. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. But, you know, well, it could be another 6 weeks we're going, you know, same old Arsenal. As we're now going same old Tottenham.
The thing is, obviously, you mentioned the kids there, they're brilliant. The concern would be how far can the kids take them in the short term? Because in the long term, they can obviously take Arsenal to the top four, no question. But will they be Arsenal players in the long term is probably the more pressing question. So what do Arsenal need to achieve this season to ensure that the likes of Emile Smith-Rowe and Bukayo Saka are still at the club next year and into the future?
Top six. They've got to be. They've got to be in the top six. Otherwise, you're giving these kids an excuse to knock on the manager's door and say they want to move. I mean, that actually doesn't happen because it's the kids' agents who'll knock on the manager's door and say, you know, he's better than this club and we want him to move on, etc. So, but no, they've got to be top six. Anything else, and I think for the manager as well, anything else is failure because they spent a lot of money. That there's no doubt, but I just think that since Adu got the job, basically in charge of recruitment, they've been poorer. I mean, they made some very, very ordinary signings, and that's the thing. You know, I go on about this to everybody, which is second most important person at any football club is the guy ahead of recruitment. Because if he gets it wrong, look at Barcelona, and you'd argue look at Madrid as well. And I know that they're over $1 billion in debt, both of them. But look at the recruitment of the players. They're just not of the standard to be winning Champions League games, etc. So that's very much where Arsenal are at the moment.
Do you accept that maybe because they're targeting clearly younger players, under 23s, that of course they're not going to be title-winning players just yet, but there is potential, like even if you look at the last window, of course, when you spend £50 million on a player like Ben White, you expect probably an immediate return, but even the likes of Tomiyasu and Ramsdale look to have come in and made an immediate impact, despite the fact that they too have been signed for their future end products.
Yeah, but it's all about the balance, isn't it? It's all about the players that you've spoken about, and you know, ones that are already there in terms of giving them the experience. And look, you know, I think I like Arteta. I like what he's trying to do. I think this is really, really difficult for him because he's under immense pressure. But listen, Arsenal as a football club, really since Arsene Wenger walked out the door, they have not been the same. And you might even say the last 18 months of Arsene's time as well at Arsenal, they weren't the same. And you know, it's cyclical at this level. You just get a couple of things wrong because of the standard and the quality of the other teams who we all know, and all of a sudden you look very, very ordinary. But they've got these kids look really top players. You're a little bit loath to go on about them too much because we know what can happen with a lot of youngsters got massive praise and then they go off the boil a little bit. But I just get the feeling that the two young boys were outstanding yesterday. I think they're going to be real, real top players.
Last point on this, Aubameyang is actually one of the most important of all of the players at all of the clubs in the Premier League. He's one of the most important individuals, because if he turns it on and gets back to some kind of level of form and shows some leadership, then that transforms the team. But if he's the arriving late in his supercar, revving the car outside, not available for fixtures, not really phoning it in, making all that money, it poisons the well. So there's very few individuals who have as much power or influence.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all right, it was myth, because they played him a lot on the left of a three. But I mean, it's down to yourself. Absolutely, totally. It's down to yourself. And look, you know, if you get 20 players, and they'll all be different, and there will be the odd one who's probably a superstar and he's not particularly bothered about if he's 10 minutes late for training and all those kind of things. But it's important, you know, because then the young kids look at him and think, well, you know, he doesn't bust a gut to get in for training, and he's always last minute. I know someone who works for the BBC who interviewed him last year, and she was kept waiting for 4 hours to interview him. And of course, you know, the media guy Arsene was kind of going, well, he's on his way, he's a little bit of a problem and all that kind of thing. He obviously just didn't really want to be there, and in the end was almost cajoled into doing the interview. Well, you know, that for me is just how are you brought up? You know, how it's all about respect. Excuse me. And if you haven't really got that respect, then I'm not quite sure when you look at these players, you kind of thinking, as soon as he has an off day, you're thinking, well, this is to be expected, because just this is the way that he is. And I'm not just picking him out. There'll be lots of players at lots of different football clubs who are exactly the same. And that's why, again, go back to recruitment, not just your ability, but, you know, are you a good bloke? When things go against you, do you actually knuckle down and try even harder? You know, are you great in the dressing room with all the players and all the younger players, etc.? Or are you just playing for yourself? And I think when you look at one or two of the Arsenal players, I get the impression that that's exactly what they are. Why did Jurgen Klopp not take Aubameyang when he could have taken him? He knew him. He knew him absolutely 100% inside out, and never, ever took him. We know on his day he's an outstanding footballer. It was never even mentioned that Aubameyang would go to Liverpool. And I think Jurgen Klopp looked at him and thought, yeah, top, top player. Dressing room, not sure.
He was interviewed after the game on Sky Sports beside Emil Smith Rowe, and he said Arsenal can be proud of these boys, while putting his arm around Smith Rowe. They are great guys and doing well. I'm happy that my kids will go to the Hale End Academy, and maybe one day will be like him. When I'm looking at that market, it suggests to me somebody who is a team player, somebody who is hugely respectful of his teammates.
Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. I don't think that we've seen that so far from him. You obviously saw it in the interview. I don't think we've seen that so far with him. And I think he's just a player who very much plays for himself. And just go back to the point, you know, why didn't Jurgen Klopp take him when he needed a striker? And when, you know, on a few occasions in the Champions League with Liverpool, he took him apart. So that's what I would always look at. And as I say, it's a massive thing now. There's so many, you know, superbly talented players, but it's a little bit in the end, it's what's happening between the ears that matters as much as anything.
It'd be interesting to see if the penny has dropped at this stage of his career, or if he is the disruptive force that we've seen him over the last couple of years. Can I move on to Liverpool? Because what level of concern do you have when the first choice defence, with Fabinho playing, with Henderson playing, concedes 3 away at Brentford? Is it just one of those things that happens over the course of a season, or does it suggest that they haven't quite got back to the level of defending that they had 2 seasons ago?
I think I'd go back to the former point rather than the latter. They just they weren't competitive enough, basically, in that department at the weekend. But you know, all clubs go through this, and as I say to you, you can only talk about your own time as players. I mean, you know, the so-called all-conquering team of the '80s. I remember going to Coventry and getting stuck 4-0. you know, we were absolutely hopeless, and I think we're in the middle of an outstanding run. It just happens, and it's a case of how you react to it and how you deal with it. I mean, I think Joe Fagan was probably the manager then, Genial Joe, and he came in to the dressing room and he looked at me and Hanson afterwards, and he basically went, "Oi, you two buggers, promise me that won't happen again." And we've gone, "No, Joe, it won't." We were awful. We were horrendous. Little Terry Gibson scored a hat-trick against us, I'm pretty sure, on that day. So, you know, and football people with experience know these things happen. And I think Klopp didn't make a great deal about it. He said, "Yeah, we weren't particularly good defensively." I don't think he'd be shouting them out in the dressing room. He will be very much, especially with City coming up in terms of the next league game, would be very much kind of, "Well, it's happened, nothing we can do. It's not normality for us. We are completely different." But they just had a bad day, and that's the way that it's dealt with.
1983, I've just quick Googled there. That was Terry Gibson's hat-trick against Liverpool.
Yeah, well, me and Hanson tried to blame Grobbelaar, but for once he wasn't. He was blameless.
So no concerns really long-term about this. It's just the league's a long season. And yeah.
Yeah, and they've now got loads of cover in there as well, haven't they? So no concerns about that. I mean, listen, City could have been 2-3-4 up at Chelsea, couldn't they? And then all of a sudden we're going, "Oh, you know, this super organised defence that doesn't give anything away," and like, what's happened to them on Saturday lunchtime? So it is football, and that is just the way that it is. And when you get, you know, these the four outstanding teams, which they are, There will be some mad results, and you know, you might argue at the moment that the top four teams in the Premier League, all right, take Brighton out of this, but the top four teams in the Premier League, they're probably the top four teams in European, maybe even world football, are they not? I can't think of any other teams that are better than them.
It'll be interesting to see how Paris Saint-Germain meld that whole group of players they have together. And
well, listen, just because he's now moaning Mbappe about everything, isn't he? He's now moaning that your man won't pass to him.
Neymar,
not
yeah.
Messi. Yeah, Neymar. And it's like, that ain't good. If he's doing that publicly, that is not good. Now, I think he probably wanted to try and get away, didn't he, in the window. And there are obviously certain ways in which you can make it difficult for the football club and make it easier for yourself to want to go. But it's not a good idea turning around to your teammates. Well, going public about it, you might have a word with him and you know, what the hell's happening and stuff like that. But not good once you go public.
The Chelsea-Man City game, really, really interesting, because Chelsea felt like they had this power over Man City over the last three or four games since Tuchel has arrived in the big games. And it just completely evaporated at the weekend. Man City were clearly the better team and probably should have beaten them by much more.
Completely outplayed them. And not just outplayed them, but outthought them rather than outfought them. Most definitely. But it's their DNA, City. That's the way they are, aren't they? And they could do that. I mean, the way they control the game and control the ball and control everything that happens is just, you know, just shows they're a really, really outstanding team. But I don't think it changes the landscape dramatically. They go to Liverpool obviously next Sunday, which again will be yet another fascinating game. But it's still these top four teams, and whether they've had a good weekend or whether they've had a bad weekend, it'll still be these four teams fighting it out. And you know, the results against each other, I think, are going to be absolute paramount, to be honest with you. So it's an even bigger result for City than it sounds. You know, 1-0 at Chelsea, brilliant, but 1-0 at Chelsea means that City have got 3 points that Chelsea cannot get, and I think that's the way this season's going to be with the top four.
Why has it gone from a chaotic state of not knowing who's going to be in the top four to what seems like a very exclusive club already this season?
Money. Quite simple. Money, wages, everything about it, that's just the way it is. You know, they've left the Tottenhams and your Arsenals and other teams in their wake, and they've just signed bigger and better players, which is not a great worry for the Premier League, but I think it's a great worry generally. If you take it all the way through, into, you know, the bottom six teams, and you look at them, and Norwich haven't got a point, have they? I think you're kind of looking at it's the problem is the gulf now between Premier League and the Championship has got even bigger. And before you throw Brentford at me, Brentford, I think, and I think I said at the start of the season, I think they win a lot of games because of the way they are. I think they've got an outstanding manager, and the boy Ivan Toney up front is a proper player, but also they all play in a certain way. They know their role, etc., and they're going to win games. I mean, you may as well relegate Norwich now, aren't we? Because they've got absolutely no chance of staying up, and it's going to be, you know, an extra one as well, extra two going with them. But it is money, and I know it's easy to say, but that's what it is. I mean, you just look at the likes of Liverpool, even looking at Liverpool and the players that they let out on loan, and basically, you know, majority of them would absolutely cruise the Championship, and they are relatively inexperienced. But you know, the bigger the club, the bigger the squad, the more money you have, and yeah, it's money. And why all of a sudden have Barcelona and Madrid started to look very, very weak? I know Madrid obviously are right at the top, but it's only because they've kept on, they've managed to keep hold of their bigger stars, and obviously with Barcelona, they are just in a mess. But didn't they give the job of recruitment to one of the former players who had to pack in? Can you remember that? Wasn't he one of the, he was the left back, wasn't he? I can't remember his name now.
Abidal. So yeah, Barcelona. Abidal, yeah. was there for a while, and then I don't know, is he still there? Certainly he was very close.
No, I think, well, he might still be there, but he's not doing the same job. So he couldn't do it. You know, he just, obviously, you can be a player and you can look at other players, but sometimes, if you then have to make a decision on which one of the three that you take, if you are in charge of recruitment, if you get it wrong, you can get it spectacularly wrong, and that's what's happened to Barcelona, and that's why probably Eric Abidal lost his job.
Let's talk briefly about Manchester United, because obviously the constant knock on Solskjaer since he got the job was that he doesn't have the experience of managing at this level. Is that increasing?
Should have now.
Well, he does. He's got a long old time at it. He's had much longer than, not much longer, but he's had longer than everybody else apart from Ferguson, who's been there since Ferguson. So when does the decision get made, or what has to happen next?
Well, look, I don't know. Did they play any sweet? They'll probably go and beat them. So it's like, you know, return to the status quo. So I just think with him, I don't think he knows his best team even yet, and you don't look at the recruitment there. So I'm sorry, I'm boring you to death with recruitment, but you don't look at recruitment there and you kind of go, oh yeah, well that's like, you know, another piece in the jigsaw, and you look at some of the players that you signed and you're kind of thinking, where is he going to play and when is he going to play? I mean, the Dutch boy that they signed, I mean, what was all that about? That seemed to me as though I will sign him because we'll stop somebody else signing him. He doesn't get a look in, does he? So I think therein lies the problem with Manchester United. Yeah, they win an awful lot of games, but we'll still look at them and think, can you play poorly and win? And I don't think they can.
They've got Villarreal on Wednesday night in the Champions League, and Villarreal drew 0-0 at the weekend with Real Madrid. Have a really strong European pedigree. The game is at Old Trafford, so that's helpful from Solskjaer's perspective, at least for the first 15 minutes when the crowd are fully behind them. Yeah. But if things start to go against them, all of a sudden there's the ooh and the expectations. So these games are, every single one of these games again becomes a referendum on them after a performance like the one at the weekend.
Yeah, it does. But am I sat here thinking they won't qualify for the later stages of the Champions League? No. And I get your thing about the opposition as well, Villarreal. I mean, you know, they'll be very, very comfortable on the ball, etc. But that's, you know, you're at a massive club. And again, you know, you always, I mean, behind the scenes, there will be discussions about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They will absolutely totally be. But then you look around and you say, who would we get? And are you going to still chuck Conte at me? Is he still out of a job?
He is, yeah. Maybe you go for a Brendan Rodgers or...
Oh, behave yourself. Behave yourself. No. No.
Why not?
No. Why?
Liverpool?
You give me... inherited an outstanding team, but not for me. You know, know him as a person, but no, not for me. It's a little bit... I think with Brendan, I think it's a little bit about him as much as anything else. So, no. And listen, the other thing is, imagine Brendan goes and loses the first three games. Former Liverpool manager. No chance.
Okay.
That shut me up for a minute.
Well, look, the list is the same as the list for all the jobs at the moment. Yeah. There's Roberto Martinez, there's, you know, Zidane.
There's another one.
Would Zidane, who has won Champions Leagues, is he exactly what they need? Because
No, I don't think he is. Excuse me. I think, you know, Zidane was really, really, I mean, fabulous player, one of the best I've ever seen, but really, really fortunate in terms of the players that he had at his disposal. So no, I think you know, any of those, it's the same kind of problem that they've already got. So no, I don't see that. I can see Conte a little bit, because I think he'd come in and he'll be strict, and it will definitely be his way. So I don't really see anybody else. I mean, Brendan Rodgers is, you know, did well at Celtic, which you would obviously expect. And he's done a good job at Leicester. And by the way, if you're talking about a team with recruitment, that's a really outstanding job they've been doing in terms of recruitment. But no, I don't see them going to Man United.
All right. So he gets the job till the end of the season, almost irrespective. Then is that like by default, Solskjaer stays till the end of the season?
No, because. There is another side to this, which of course is the owners, and not so much the owners in terms of making a decision about the manager, but if they don't get in the Champions League knockout stage, you're talking about the share price, which is then completely different. I'm pretty sure, but I don't know the exact figures. But when they signed Ronaldo, I bet the share price rocketed. So, you know, happy days. So they're probably at the moment not particularly bothered too much, because they look at it completely differently, and you know they're allowed to because they own the football club. But no, it's just if they don't get in the Champions League knockout stages, I think that's a big thing against the manager. But then, you know, if they're still in the top four and they're only 3 points away from actually, you know, being top of the league in terms of the Premier League,
yeah,
I think it'd be very, very harsh to sack him. And listen, it's one of those weekends. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
But as I said at the start of it, you know, three of those results you just would not have predicted.
That's why we love it. Mark, good stuff. Yeah. Thanks a million.
Pleasure.
Cheers. That's Mark Lawrenson giving us his thoughts on a really interesting weekend of Premier League activity.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.